This week on the show, I made my co-hosts disappear. I made my co-hosts disappear.
Actually, we're still here.
Yeah.
I was getting a sandwich.
Do you guys want to talk about Home Alone 2 then?
Sure.
I'm Neff Knowles.
I'm Laura Medeiros.
I'm Roddy Guzm.
And I'm Megan Swain.
And this is Bad With Numbers. As an adult, do you end up sympathizing more with the burglars than you do Kevin in these movies?
I don't think so. I think I feel bad for Kevin because all of the shit that he's been put through, none of it is justified. Like, even in the beginning of Home Alone 2, when he's talking to his mom, it's just like, okay, well, Buzz egged him on, so of course he's gonna push him over. Are you joking?
Yeah, Buzz basically single-handedly messed up an entire concert. And as I said, I sympathize with the piano player who, to her credit, is not laughing when it's happening. She's playing the piano and she's kind of like encouraging Kevin when he's doing his solo, and then all this crap happens and people start laughing and she's looking around like, and then she gets hit in the head by something that gets knocked over,
and she's like the butt of the joke. She's like seriously injured, and as an audience we're supposed to laugh. So I guess, yeah, I feel for the piano player.
As an adult though, do you not sympathize more with their bodies when he is putting them through hell?
Oh yeah.
Didn't they want to murder him?
Who, the burglars?
Yeah. Did they, weren't they like going, like, were they going to kill him or had the intent to kill him?
I think they had the intent, sure. Welcome to Bad With Numbers, a podcast where we talk about mostly terrible sequels. And this week on the show, we are talking about Home Alone 2, Lost in New York from the year 1992, directed by Chris Columbus.
The director of Rent.
Hell yeah. First Blu-ray I ever owned was that fucking Rent adaptation.
That's a story.
I have a weird relationship with that fucking Rent movie, man. Chris Columbus also made Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh yeah, Harry Potter.
The first two Harry Potter movies. Oof.
The first one wasn't that bad.
Weirdly enough, those are like my Christmas movies, is like the Harry Potter movies, because they always have a Christmas scene in it.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Wait, is the Harry Potter Christmas scene the one where he just misses his family?
No, he never misses his family.
Which family are you referring to?
The one in the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant he misses the Dursleys. I was like, I don't think he's missing them at all.
He was given, like, used socks for Christmas. Like, he does not care.
In one of the books, they send him a twopence coin in his card. And he's like, oh, well, that's the most practical thing they've ever given me. And then he ends up giving it to Ron, because Ron, I guess, has never encountered regular money.
Muggle money, yeah.
Muggle money.
But I guess it kind of hits home what Christmas movies are all about, because no matter what, they're always is some tangent to about, like, Christmas is about being with family.
I mean, even Die Hard kind of hits that beat, right? He just wants to spend Christmas with his family, you know?
Okay, let's just get this out of the way. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I'm not here to argue with anybody about that. It is a statement. It is a fact. It is a Christmas movie. We're done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Seconded. Closing that motion right now.
Is Home Alone 2 a Christmas movie?
No. Half of it takes place in Miami. No.
Have they all been, like, at Christmas? Or, like, have they changed the setting up and they're like, hey, it's, I don't know, what's another season? Fall.
Oh, wait. That's a good question. Does the third one take place at Christmas?
Who knows, right? Because who the fuck saw that movie?
It's terrible.
Oh, you actually saw it?
I don't like it. My mom said she likes it out of all of them, which is weird. I think it has the guy from Third Rock from the Sun, which is the harbinger of the bad sequel.
Wait, John Lithgow?
No, the other guy.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Fry? No.
French Stewart,
who's been in a few sequels in his time, and I think he was in that one. I'm too lazy to look this up right now. I just remember I didn't like it because the kid's home sick. That's the premise of the third one. And then the fourth one is Kevin again, but played by a different kid, and it's a completely different setup, and it's fucking terrible.
It goes without saying that we've all seen Home Alone to an extent. We're all familiar with Home Alone. And listener, you also must be familiar with Home Alone, because, I mean, that first movie was such a phenomenon. I remember seeing that in theaters. I remember seeing this movie in theaters as well. I think everybody saw Home Alone at some point in their life.
Yeah, I mean, it's that classic, like, CBC movie or something like that. It's the type that you just put on in the background, you just wrap everybody's presents, like, on December 23rd, and you're, you know...
You're so organized.
I don't know. Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, there was this one year where my mom and I had to wrap our presents back to back.
Oh, wow.
Because we had no other time to do it. So I had to sneak wrap one, and I just ended up, like, I think it was a robe or something like that, and there were holes everywhere, and I told her just not to look at it. I was like, I'm going to put this to the back of the tree. I ran out of paper. Just don't look.
It's a solid Christmas, because even, like, when I was watching this, I was like, if I just, like, ate a gigantic Christmas meal and this was on, it would put me to sleep. And I was like, yeah, that's probably it. Yeah.
I mean, this movie will put you to sleep, but maybe not because of that. Maybe because of the fact that this thing is 2 hours long.
When I put it on, I was like, oh, this should be like a quick ride. I was like, oh, why is this 2 hours?
I watched the first movie last night in prep for doing this, and it holds up. It's great. And it's like a tight 98 minutes. Why did they feel the need to shove in another 20 minutes to this movie? I don't know. Also, just straight out of the gate, why is this movie called Home Alone 2? Because he's not home alone. He's in New York.
Well, that's why they have the extra subtitle, Lost in New York.
But he's also not really lost in New York because he seems to know where he's going at all times in this movie.
He's lost on a personal level.
He doesn't leave Manhattan. I think he mostly stays, obviously. He just runs around Manhattan because he's right across from Central Park.
Yeah, I mean, apart from all of the parts of this they shot in Chicago.
He's apparently down the street from where his uncle lives. Like, that house.
The geography of this movie is so fucked. Not once do we see this kid take a subway or a bus anywhere in Manhattan, and yet he's...
Yeah, in the opening scene, he's running around. He goes to Chinatown. He goes to just a bunch of sites and stuff. We see him buy the fireworks, which he does use later.
Okay, so we don't need to recap Home Alone. We get it. Kid gets left alone. Bunch of burglars trying to break into his house. He has to defend his house. He doles out much pain on said burglars, and then everything ties up neatly in a bow. Home Alone 2 starts with an opening shot of same said house, and this is a John Hughes movie, so obviously this house is fucking massive.
Wait, what does that mean? John Hughes movies just has, like, massive houses?
A lot of rich white characters.
It's like a staple of these upper middle class families. They all live in these huge Chicago houses.
I prefer him writing what he knows than him trying to
branch out.
Yeah, because I have a feeling, like, when he tries to write characters who are diverse, doesn't it just go terribly wrong for him?
I mean, it doesn't anymore because he's been dead for like 12 years, but
true. Yeah.
Longer than that, in fact.
But it's a nice house. Do they live there with just... How big is your family?
It's the 14, right?
Is
because
it?
She's counting the tickets.
There's 7 kids in both families, but only one of those families live there.
Yeah.
Like, the other ones are just staying there because they're all fucking off on holiday together.
One of the... Right. The one brother is Kate's brother, and he's the rich guy that splits his time between New York and Paris. And then Frank, I don't know whose brother he is, but he's the cheapskate, and him and his kids are...
Uncle Frank is John Hurt's brother. John Hurt plays the father in this film, Mr. McAllister. Uncle Frank is supposed to be his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is just such a John Hughes thing of having these big-ass houses. Even in Pretty in Pink, Molly Ringwald was meant to be living with her single-parent stumble-bum dad, and their living room is still bigger than my entire house, so... This was obviously something that Hughes just kind of fetishized.
It's also easier to film in bigger houses, probably.
Sure. I mean, I guess the it's only the exterior we're seeing.
It's wild, though. Like, have you ever, like, met a friend and, like, you go to their house and then you find out their house is, like, this style of house?
Yeah.
It's such a weird feeling. And you feel like you walked into, like, another world.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Oh, no, no, it's not that one.
Okay.
No, there was this other time where,
That is a big house.
That is a big house.
That does not...
No, there was just another time, I remember for Christmas for us, it's just, like, everyone getting together in this, like, really cramped house. Like, you choose the family that has the biggest house, and you go to it, and it becomes unbearably really hot by the end of the night.
Yep.
And, like, you just wear whatever. But then I remember, like, through Instagram, an acquaintance of mine, for, like, their Christmas, it's, like, they dress up in, like evening wear, and I was like, I don't know how to process this Christmas.
Oh my god. I remember I invited, like, my friends over two or three Christmases ago, and there were like 15 of us. Because it was all of our friends plus significant others, and it was just all of us, so I had to cook.
Guess what you're not doing this year?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't do it last year either, because that one year that I did it, I said, fuck that, never again. I was like, I love you all. I will see you at lunch. I am not doing dinner. Goodbye.
We catch up with the McAllisters at the start of this movie. They're all preparing to go to Florida for Christmas holidays, which...
Is that a popular destination? Is it just because it's hot?
Yes, it is.
Really?
Snowbirds.
I love Florida in the holiday season.
Oh.
Because, like I said, I go to Universal all the time, but they have the Dr. Seuss World, which is always decked out in Dr. Seuss-themed, like, Christmas decorations, and I get to wear shorts. Amazing.
So it's like, I love Florida because I get to wear shorts.
In the middle of December. What a wild idea.
I mean, it happens in a lot of other countries too.
Well, yeah.
It's not just only Florida.
We're in core, like, Toronto, though. Like, we are in Canada. That shit doesn't fly.
People still wear shorts in cold weather, so.
Yeah, that's true. The whole lives don't get cold.
Yeah, so, like, why are they going... Like, it never explains why they're going to Florida, because I don't know why they would want to travel after the previous year's events. And also, I take it Frank was the one that picked the motel.
Wait, so how did they split the... I assume that it was a dad paying for everything. Was it not?
Probably.
Yeah, so wasn't it Frank's idea? Or I remember somebody saying that, like, the dad paid for everything.
Yeah, so then why did Frank choose the cheapest? He seems like a cheapskate, so that way he would choose the most expensive? Or was he being kind?
He doesn't seem like a kind person. I don't know.
He's just loud, I guess.
Yeah, they're all running around this house like maniacs. And my first thought is, why is this fucking Kevin McAllister kid not in care? Like, why was he not taken away from these parents instantly after the events of Home Alone 1?
Well, I mean, that police officer in Miami looks like he's... you know, ready to do
so. Oh, yeah. He's got social services on speed dial.
Yeah.
That was one of my notes, was that I said, at least this, I don't know, I have a note about it somewhere where I was like, this Miami police officer actually seems to be taking this seriously. Because in the first movie, it's almost this ongoing joke that the local police don't understand what the fuck she's trying to tell them about.
Right.
Like, the one cop goes to the house, rings the doorbell, gets no response, and then assumes that that means there's nobody in there, rather than, you know, there might be a child bleeding somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
In the house. You know, like, an 8-year-old child? Like, it was just, it's just the most appalling part of that movie, I think.
We've got some pretty interesting characters in amongst these kids that have gone on to do some stuff since then. Like, Hilary Wolf, the actress that plays one of Kevin McAllister's sisters, she quit acting after this movie, and she actually ended up representing the United States at the 1996 and 2000 Summer Olympics in judo.
Ooh.
Wow, talk about girls.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty sharp pivot into a different career. Good for her.
I always find those, like, career stories really interesting, that people that, like, left acting and, like, excel in another field.
Yeah, we've also got Devon Rattray playing Buzz. Who doesn't love Buzz? He's, like, the archetypical mean old brother, right?
Garbage.
He's, like, kind of carved out a niche as a character actor these days. He's in, he was in Hustlers, that J-Lo stripper movie that came out last year. He was in Blue
Ruin. With Cardi B?
Yeah, with Cardi B.
I love Cardi B. Ironically.
He was in Blue Ruin, which is a cool movie. So he's still in stuff. And then we also have Fuller, played by Kieran Culkin.
Yep, he's been in stuff.
He's been in a lot of stuff.
About a million miles away from his Succession character here. He's, like, not getting into a BDSM relationship with his dad's second-in-command in this movie. But he's kind of cute in this film, right?
I do love him. He's got this charm. I don't know what it is.
He's like the quintessential nerdy kid.
Yeah, he is.
He's the type of kid that I feel bad for at Christmas parties, because he's the kid that the parents and all the adults will make him do, like, these, like, dumb cute shit.
Yeah.
True.
It's like, I don't know. Dude, sing for us. Were you ever that kid at a party?
No.
Because it sucks being that kid.
No, I was never asked to sing for anybody.
Oh, do you want me to ask you to sing right now?
I had some kind of joke that my parents kept making me tell their friends, and it had something to do with why did the deer cross the road, and I can't remember what the punchline was. I really hope it was something unintentionally hilarious, like, to make a buck. Like, I really hope that was the punchline.
God damn.
That would be fucking awesome. I have a feeling it wasn't, but that's the only thing I can think of that would be unintentionally hilarious enough for my parents to make me repeat it to all their friends without me knowing why.
This family needs to learn how alarm clocks work, because they fucking unplug the alarm clock and it starts flashing and nobody does a goddamn thing about it. You so would fucking notice that. Have you ever tried to sleep next to a flashing alarm clock?
But the real issue is that they relied on one person to wake them up. I'm like, hold up.
Yes. Like Frank was like, oh, you give the worst gosh darn wake-up calls. And I'm thinking, you didn't have your own alarm clock?
Yeah.
Why were you, like, there was, like, 15 people in the house or whatever. Were they all expecting, like, Peter to get up and then go slam on, like, 10 different doors or something? Like, that's kind
apparently, of... apparently, yes in this movie.
Stupid. The house is huge.
I guess that's the like thread that brings us from the first one into the second one. That's the similarities. Yeah. Is they still can't get their fucking shit together.
I mean, they literally wake up and say, we did it again. It's like, holy shit, family.
That was clearly a wonder, like, I feel like you're in like a, you're writing this. It's like, how do we get people to believe that they would do this again? How about we just say it?
Yeah, it's kind of the fucking easy route, right? Uncle Frank, fucking what an asshole this guy is. So Kevin needs to go and get something from his bathroom. I think he needs to get a tie or something. And he says he can't go in there because Uncle Frank doesn't want to see him, or doesn't want Kevin to see him naked because it will make him feel inadequate.
Yeah.
Like, Uncle Frank's talking to this kid about his dong. What the fuck, Uncle Frank?
And like Peter's reaction to that is kind of like, eh? Like, it's the exact right reaction, but he should have followed that up with, okay, I'll go get the tie.
Yeah. Also, why the fuck is this guy showering in his brother's house with the door fucking open?
I noticed that he was showering in an ensuite bathroom that was off of a bedroom that had bunk beds in it. So I don't know whose bedroom that was, but it clearly wasn't, you know, it wasn't Peter's bedroom.
Every bedroom in this house has got an ensuite by the looks
That's
of it, right?
Fucked up. This yeah. Insane. Fucking rich people.
And also we meet Catherine O'Hara playing Mrs. McAllister. Oh.
Mm-hmm. I love her.
Yeah, she's so good. I was noticing it last night when I was watching the first one that she's actually legitimately great in that first movie.
Yep.
And I kind of feel like she got robbed of a little bit of awards heat for that movie. That year it was all about Whoopi Goldberg and Ghost.
I mean, Whoopi Goldberg and Ghost is like a good time.
No, I'm not saying Catherine O'Hara should have won, but I'm just saying she should have been in that conversation maybe a little more than she was. So before they're off on holiday, they all go to a pageant at Kevin's school where they're all performing a Christmas concert. Did you guys have to do pageants at school?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, same here.
But like, I've never been to one as an adult, and so part of me appreciates all my parents having to sit through all the other kids.
As a parent, I have been to many of these, and you're always just like on the edge of your seat hoping it's not your kid that fucks up. You're always just kind of like, at the back of your mind, you're just like, oh, I just hope they don't mess up and embarrass me in front of everyone.
What? That's a takeaway.
And thankfully she never did, so, you know, thanks for that.
Wow. I'm happy for you, Dadneth.
Yeah, you just don't want that shit ending up on, like, America's Funniest Home Videos, or in my case, You've Been Framed, right? You don't want to be that parent.
Tosh.0.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If one of the kids, like, fall off the stage.
Yeah, so, I mean, so that happens here, right? All of these kids fall off the stage because Buzz is stood behind Kevin, like, farting around, playing drumstick candles on his head.
Buzz is garbage.
Yeah, he is. It's garbage.
This audience are eating it up like it's the it's literally like Chris Rock just walked out at the fucking Apollo. It's insane.
Yeah, people are laughing way too hard at a really embarrassing kid doing something stupid.
Kevin's reaction is maybe, I mean, the fallout from it is a little unwarranted, but Kevin's reaction is justified because
I think if Kevin had known that pushing Buzz was going to knock everybody over plus parts of the set, I'm sure he wouldn't have done it.
And nearly kill that poor piano player.
And the piano teacher didn't deserve that.
Yeah, but it was so hard. Like, you really, when you ask about who you feel for more, like, this is one of the scenes where you do feel for Kevin, because you're like, why is it hard for these parents to understand that his brother was harassing him, and no one wants to believe his story or understand his side of things? They just want him to fully accept that he was wrong and apologize. I was like, no, I don't want that. You stick to your guts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and like, the fact that they don't believe that Buzz is bullying him afterwards is just like, really?
These parents are incompetent.
Oh, the entire family's terrible, with the possible exception of Fuller.
If I was Kevin, I would definitely be saving up for, like, my 18th birthday and just getting out of there.
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
What he should be saving up for is emancipating himself from his parents, just like Macaulay Culkin did in real life.
Yeah.
Booyah.
Yeah, I mean, his dad, Kit Culkin. Mm-hmm. There are stories about that guy. He's a piece of shit, so fuck him. Yeah, it's pretty sad.
I mean, as much as I love Peter, in the first movie, he makes no attempt to call the house after, you know, like, after a certain point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, they try once and then he just isn't. I mean, Kate's like dragging herself halfway across the country and Peter's just sitting back at her brother's place. Doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean, John Hurt, God rest his soul, R.I.P. John Hurt, but he's kind of useless in these movies.
Because, like, the phone, yeah, in the first movie, the phones get fixed, like, partway through the week, and nobody bothers to try to call the house.
But that would end the movie faster, so.
I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. Considering John Hughes went way out of his way to explain every little thing, that was one of the things he didn't explain.
Yeah, Buzz calls Kevin a trout sniffer.
Yes. Take that, you little trout sniffer.
What the fuck kind of insult is that for?
I don't know, but I feel offended.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm just like, hey, I don't sniff trouts. How dare you?
You little pike smeller?
Have at it. Yeah, I don't... It just sounds like, I guess the tone of voice is really what the insult is. Or it's just like, you know that he meant it, even though it didn't even make sense. It's just like, I know what your intent was. That's garbage.
The intent is garbage, but it's true, though. I feel like a kid Buzz's age would say something worse.
Absolutely.
Well, that's why it's a children's movie. Otherwise Buzz would be swearing.
I mean, at least tell him he's adopted or something, right? I don't know. A trout sniffer just seems so out of left field for anything. I don't know.
Yeah, and Kevin rips into his family about how they all suck. And
rightfully so.
Uncle Frank is like, you've spoiled your family's Christmas. And he's like, I wouldn't want to spoil your fun, Mr. Cheapskate. And I was like, that was earned. You earned that. You fucking earned that.
Okay, but like, it's only been a year since they full on left and forgot about him. That's like a very traumatic experience.
He's traumatized.
Why is this kid not in therapy for the course of this film? Like, has he literally not been to therapy about this? Because two crooks tried to fucking murder him and his parents abandoned him.
Yeah. First he thought that he made his parents, that has made his family disappear. So he felt bad about that. Stole a toothbrush, felt bad about that. Had to single-handedly keep his house from getting robbed. And then he finds out that really it's just because his parents forgot about him. And they went all the way to Paris without realizing that, you know, so it that would be traumatic.
I got separated from my mum in a fine fair in Warrington when I was 5. Mm-hmm. And I was... separated from her for all of about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I still think about it now, 35 years later. So what the fuck is going on in this kid's head?
Yeah.
It's true. It's one of the ones where, like, this is not, like, you have to suspend your, like, belief? Disbelief? Or, yeah. But, like, it's true. These parents and the family, you would think they would be a lot kinder to a child they abandoned.
The other thing is that when you think about it, Kevin is a very resilient kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's a go-getter. He was doing his thing and everything. It was just that, like, end gap that he actually felt, you know, traumatized over.
Mm.
And I guess, I don't know, I'm sure that they would have talked to him about it, and then he's like, wow, this is great, I'm gonna suppress that, because that's what you do, you just stick it down.
See, I would milk it for everything that it's worth, you know?
Yeah, I would say that the first film sets him up to be almost a victim of his own success, because when he gets mad at his family again, he's like, I could go on my own vacation. So yeah, when he ends up in New York, he's like, fuck it, I'm going on my own vacation, I can do it, and then, you know, doesn't last. And then later on, he's like, I don't want to go on a vacation like this ever again.
Side note, there's too many kids in this family. They're clearly Catholic.
Yeah, good point, honestly.
Catholic or reckless?
Well, maybe. Bit of both.
It's like, my family's Catholic and I'm an only child.
Fair enough. You've disproven my theory.
Maybe in the world of John Hughes, that's it. They just have big families.
Let's just fucking talk about Macaulay Culkin for a second.
Okay.
He's so good in these movies.
Yep.
Like, he's just, like, such a screen presence. It's insane that he was 11 years old when he's making this. And the whole film just hangs off him. And I don't know. I just think, like, people have, like, he's been typecast by this movie. And this movie has been, like, the albatross around his neck for the rest of his life. But he's kind of great in this film.
No, yeah. He's a, like, child actors, they vary. And he's a very good child actor. And I guess just a very good actor.
I liked him in Saved.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, he's good in Saved. He was good in the movie Party Monster, which isn't a great film, but he was really good in it. I don't know, he doesn't really do much acting anymore, I guess, but he's too busy, like, farting around with Red Letter Media and All right, so like some of the movies he made after this weren't great. I think I mentioned Getting Even with Dad on the Problem Child 2 episode. That's a shitty movie. I don't like Richie Rich.
Yeah, I mean, and he was in, as I mentioned, he was in My Girl.
Oh, yeah.
He gets stung to death by bees. He was in, what was it, The Wishmaster or some shit?
Pagemaster.
Oh my god, if he'd have been in Wishmaster, that would have been such a better fucking movie. What is your wish, young Macaulay? I want my family to disappear, so be it.
And that's to get Home Alone 6. That'd be the wildest crossover. You have, like, Freddy versus Jason. You have Kevin versus, what, Wishmaster is his name?
Kevin versus Wishmaster. Yes, please.
There's, like, well, I just looked it up. There has been, like, five of them.
What, five Home Alone movies?
The one that I saw wasn't even, that was number five. The one I saw where they brought back Kevin, that was a movie of the week. So there's Home Alone 2 Lost in New York, Home Alone 3, which is when the kid is sick.
Mm-hmm.
Home Alone The Holiday Heist. I don't know what that is. I haven't seen it. And yeah. The Wonderful World of Disney one, Home Alone 4, Taking Back the House.
Wait, there's two Home Alone 4s?
Okay, so Home Alone 4 was 2002.
Holiday Heist was also a TV movie, and it came out the same year. Oh, wait, sorry. No, I'm looking at the wrong thing.
No, it's fine. It doesn't matter.
Home Alone 4 was 2002.
Oh, okay.
Holiday Heist was 2012.
Okay, there you go.
Wow, that's a gap.
Yes, so we're just very excited for the cinematic universe of the Home Alones where they all meet each other.
We need Kevin versus
Predator.
Those other two kids. Whatever the fuck their name was.
They go to the burglar convention and they have to get rid of them all?
Burglar convention.
So as soon as we're talking about like all the other Home Alone movies, I read a spec script maybe 3 or 4 years ago. There was one part spec, one part fan fiction. And it basically dealt with an adult Kevin McAllister dealing with the fallout of this trauma.
Ooh.
And basically trying to get home to visit his mum. But at the same time, Harry and Marv, the two burglars, are on their way to try and kill Kevin's mum.
Oh.
I was like, fuck, this is dark. I mean, it was R-rated Home Alone. It was very strange.
Huh.
Did you say Chris Columbus is he also dead?
No, Chris Columbus isn't dead.
I'd love to see him.
Laura.
No, I meant I'd love to see him direct this. Not I'd love to see him dead. That was not what I was going with that.
That's a little harsh.
No.
I mean, I'm no fan of Bicentennial Man, but yeah, come on.
He directed the Harry Potters. He has at least some kind of, you know, connection to me. He doesn't have to die.
He likes quaint family movies. Yeah.
He does. He tells of that.
So they fucking managed to all make it to the airport this time. They're all running through Chicago's O'Hare Airport.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the airport was open while they were filming this, which is just fucking chaos, right?
People kept stopping the actors for autographs.
Aww.
And basically Kevin gets separated from his dad. He spots a guy wearing his dad's coat and assumes that's his dad. And he gets on a plane going to New York.
First off, this is the part where like, you know what? They could potentially sue this airline.
Yeah, definitely.
The airline practices of 1992 are radically different from the airline practices of 2020, right?
Is your family on this? Go ahead.
Sure,
no problem.
You just go sit wherever.
Oh, there he is, right over there.
Okay, cool.
Doesn't
instead
even
of verifying.
Check. Yeah. But I like the part where it's like, she's like rushing and the flight attendant or the person that at front was like, don't worry, we'll get everyone on board. It's like, you did it though.
She drops all the boarding passes, right? And she just like scoops them up and doesn't bother to like check them or anything.
He had a boarding pass later because the bandits find it in his pocket and they're like, Miami.
So he didn't even drop his boarding pass.
Wow, lame.
Yeah, either that or it was the return ticket or boarding pass or whatever. But yeah, she could have just checked the passenger manifest. Like normally they have like a list, right?
Oh yeah.
Exactly. Or put a call out on the tannoy of the plane.
Yeah. Make the pilot wait another 2 minutes.
Are the McAllisters on board? Hello.
Check if this kid is actually supposed to be on this plane, or, you know, she could have said, hey kid, do you know what your destination is? And he would have said Miami, and she would have said nope. Also, the flight to New York wasn't booked solid. Considering it was the holiday season, that's pretty impressive. Because she was like, take what's empty. Which could have easily resulted in somebody not having their seat.
This one's kind of on Kevin. The first one, it's on his parents, but this time it's on him, the little dumbass. It's his fault. He should have been fucking paying attention.
Fucking around with a little tape deck that...
Yeah, what is this little tape thing he's got?
Who the fuck bought him that? because, like, he's such an annoying kid. Why would you buy a kid his age something that annoying to play around with?
But that toy looked awesome.
Oh, no, it looked fun as hell. But, like, from the parents' perspective, that's the most irritating thing.
Was it real? Because a part of me as a kid, I was wondering if it was real.
They produced one after the fact because when the movie came out. It didn't exist before that. I know somebody that had one, but it wasn't a product that existed before the movie. They created it specifically for the movie, and then they...
It looks like a fucking camcorder that he's carrying around, right? It's got like that weird stalk microphone on it and everything. It's very odd.
It's kind of like something that... it looks like something a journalist would use.
When I was a kid, I stole my dad's dictaphone and used to sneak it into concerts. I remember like sneaking it into a Smashing Pumpkins concert once and like taping the whole thing on a dictaphone and then playing it back to my friends like the next day, and the audio quality was so fucking bad. It was just like a blur of bleh.
Well, yeah, because dictaphones are just for like audio notes, so that...
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time. I just assumed that if I held it in my pocket discreetly while I was stood at the show that I would get the whole
gig.
That's
hilarious. But... yeah, those are for just secretaries to play back audio notes later and type them out.
I'm just laughing. I was like, man, I must have been a really annoying kid, because I think I asked my parents for that. Little did I know it doesn't exist.
No, after the movie came out, it existed.
Oh, after?
For
okay.
a while, yeah.
So
yeah.
I wasn't just asking for something that didn't exist.
No, it definitely existed after the movie came out. It was a promotional item.
That seems like a very expensive tie-in to produce for a movie like this, but I guess...
It wasn't that high quality of a tape recorder. It was a toy. I knew somebody that had it.
But like those type of toys were like really popular, because even when I was a kid, there was this thing called like a yak back or
yep.
talk back. Yeah.
I had one of those.
Yeah, that was like a thing that you just had. But really, it doesn't, like, the amount of fun you have with it is probably like a good 10 minutes.
Somebody gave me that around the same time that I was learning about phone freaking, and I realized that I could record, because with phones, it's the tones that are doing the dialing, not the buttons. So,
nah, that's right, yeah.
So if you play the tones into the receiver, it dials the phone. And I remember just fucking around with that, with the yak back, as I could, it was clear enough that I could dial a phone with it, which I thought was cool.
That sounds dope.
You could get free payphone calls if you knew what you were doing in the 90s. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I did not know that at all.
Bell probably hated hackers because there was this whole set of instructions flying around the internet on how people could scam Bell payphones, basically.
Exactly. So Kevin gets on the plane that's headed to New York, sits his ass down next to a gentleman, and starts a conversation with him. And, oh, what a joke. This guy's French and doesn't speak any English.
Uh-huh.
Did anybody translate what he says?
No.
I found the translation. I got it. I mean, when I was watching it, I kind of got the gist of what he was saying anyways, but...
Yeah, wasn't he saying that, like, he's been to... It was either Florida or New York, and it's really nice. He was a tourist there, and something, something, something. My grade at French is really carrying me here, I can tell.
Yeah, I mean... Kevin puts the headphones anyways. He doesn't hear the announcement for the destination, which is convenient.
Also, you're not allowed to wear over-ear headphones during takeoff.
You're not supposed to, but he's a child, so I guess they thought, you know, whatever.
I mean, that's another flight steward not doing their job.
Yep.
Yeah, but he breaks the fourth wall by giving the camera a little look when this guy starts speaking French, and I'm thinking, who does this guy think he is? Lil Bow Wow? Callback.
I love the eyebrows that he...
Yeah, this kid has great eyebrow game, right?
Yeah. He's always like, huh? Eh?
The airport scene where they're getting their baggage, I got distracted by the fact that there's a bunch of sailors in the background.
What?
I don't know if they set that up on purpose or if they were filming at Miami Airport and there just happened to be sailors. It's just really distracting. Like, amazing. In the background, there's guys in, like, full sailor uniforms.
Nice. It's the fucking cast of On the Town.
I was like, did they just have extra sailor costumes? And they were, like, telling a bunch of extras, like, okay, you gotta dress up like sailors now.
Yeah, he approaches the agent at the airport, and hey, it's played by Ally Sheedy from Breakfast Club and Short Circuit 1.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
This is when her career was in free fall, I guess. Aww. But it was nice of John Hughes to throw her a bone like that.
So I guess Peter had his boarding pass in his pocket because Kevin ended up with his, like, bag with his wallet and everything. Either that or Peter just, you know, got onto the plane by virtue of his own charisma.
Maybe. I mean, John Hurd was a charismatic guy, right?
Yeah, he was pretty good looking.
So Kevin realizes that he's in New York and that he's on his own, and he has this kind of epiphany that sets the movie really in motion, that he's having his own damn holiday. Now,
some intense saxophone in the back.
Yeah, I went to New York around about the time that this movie is set. That was no place for a child. New York was fucking terrifying in the early 90s.
New York is still terrifying.
Like I said, for most of the movie, he just hangs around Manhattan and mostly on like a single block.
But Times Square in the early 90s was petrifying as a child. I was terrified of that place.
I remember when my mom and I went circa 2005, we ended up going to the World Trade Center.
In 2005?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like the sorry, Ground Zero area.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Sorry. Woo, back in time. No, I meant like, sorry. No, I meant like Ground Zero. It was the station, right?
Sure,
that we were
yeah.
in.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that happened on that trip was I found out that open carry is a thing.
Yeah.
Where I had these big, bright lime green pants on because I'm a, you know, preteen at the time. And some big, massive man came up to me. Like, this guy is built like a brick wall. He has this skin tight, like penitentiary orange shirt on. And right in the middle of his chest, I can see the outline of a handgun. And he comes up to me and I'm convinced that I am going to go ahead and get my pants stolen from me or like something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he comes up to me and he's like, hey, kid, I like your pants. And I was like, thank
oh my
you.
God.
That's a weird thing to say to a teenage girl.
It was weird. I mean,
just but randomly.
They were like trip pants, which are the big like parachute pants,
yeah.
almost
oh, yeah.
and they've got all yeah. the chains and stuff, so they were like that, so like
Candy Raver type of pants or something.
Exactly. So yeah. then he was just like, I like pants, kid. And then he walks on and I was just like, oh my god, mom, he had a gun.
You should have been like, I like your gun, sir.
Right. And he, you know, my mom was just like, oh, you didn't, sorry, I should have told you that. And I'm like, yes.
Well, that is pretty scary though.
So no, New York's terrifying when you were younger.
It is. Yeah, Kevin's farting around, though. He doesn't seem to care about any of this. So like we say, he goes to Chinatown. He gets on the roof of the World Trade Center somehow. Maybe he was checking to see what the girders were made of and if jet fuel would melt them.
But like, I appreciate Kevin's aesthetic. Like his like outfit choices is like a perfect Christmas like outfit. Did you? Like, would you want his like jacket and his like hats and his jumper? It's all great.
It's not so much in this movie, but it's in the first movie. He has got Chris Evans Knives Out level sweater game in that first
yeah,
movie.
That's true.
He's wearing the chunky knit like a boss.
It makes you feel Christmas. Just wanted to say, I would enjoy his like obviously adult version. His like clothing line would be great. The Home Alone clothing line.
Quick note, did you see that Catherine O'Hara reenacted the Kevin screen?
I heard about that, yeah.
Oh, she's so cute.
We stan Catherine O'Hara. She's so good.
Oh, I love her.
She's a national treasure. Our national treasure.
Nobody get any ideas.
Yeah, so welcome to the movie, Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci, the bad guys from the first movie. Why the fuck are they in this film? I mean, aside from contractual obligation and huge paychecks,
yeah.
you know? It's this movie's just hinging on too many coincidences already.
Yeah, there's more than one antagonist to the film, basically. Like, there's more than one... Yeah, it's kind of a balancing act.
Yeah, I mean, they could just get some new villains, right? They don't need to bring back the same villains. They can have New York has got plenty of villainous types. Yeah, I mean, there's one makes a cameo in a few minutes time, but
I respect that Daniel Stern is a really good physical actor, because like this movie gets very ridiculous and Daniel Stern is just owning it in every scene, even though he's feigning getting, you know, critically injured in the head. But he just does a fantastic job.
Yeah, he like you say, he's really good at the physical comedy stuff.
And he's also like 2 feet taller than Joe Pesci, and there's a lot more shots of him standing next to Joe Pesci in this film, and it is just fucking hilarious to look at.
Yeah, I mean, a toddler is 2 feet taller than Joe Pesci, right? I was kind of thinking like, what? But they could have got some sort of identical villains, right? Maybe like, I don't know, Danny DeVito.
Ooh.
And Howard Stern, maybe?
No.
If you're keeping the Stern thing. Why not do that? That's a nice contrast in height there. And also, why hasn't... So Marv, the Daniel Stern character, is clearly lacking, you know, mental faculties.
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't Joe Pesci just, like, straight up killed this guy like he was Lenny from Of Mice and Men? Why hasn't he just taken him out in a field and shot him in the head?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's partly Marv's fault that they went to prison because of the whole wet bandits thing. So why are they still working together?
Exactly. He should have shit canned him already.
They're in a codependent relationship.
They're hetero life mates.
What? I've never heard that phrase before.
You've never heard hetero life mates?
No, I've never been in a conversation where someone says hetero life mates. Isn't that like just, what the hell is that?
It's pretty much what it says on the tin, dude.
Because you just say you're friends? Or you need to...
No. Life. This is for life.
Friends come and go, Roddy. Hetero life mates, they're for life.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be an app for that.
Is that just what? I'm so confused by that. No, I just so confused that you need to like define. It's fine. Whatever.
You're the one that doesn't like labels, I guess. So yeah, sure.
That's true. With his three labels.
Steam. Patch that soon.
Let's not fucking get into that again. So Kevin's, yeah, he's farting around. He acts like he's never seen a homeless person before.
That could be true.
And in fairness, she doesn't look like a typical homeless person.
No. I'm not even talking. Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, sure. But he's blatantly from Privilege,
yes.
Right?
And
his shitty upper middle class suburb really like bus all the homeless people out as soon as they arrive. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like such a weird reaction to have to seeing somebody on the street, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he realizes that he's got his dad's credit card and all his dad's money. So mm-hmm. He does the thing that any child would do and books himself a room at the fucking Plaza. And this is where we meet. Oh, fuck my life. Donald Trump is in the Plaza lobby. And Kevin asks him for directions, and he's probably given him the wrong directions.
Yeah, probably.
Like, he gave all of America the wrong advice about COVID, you know?
In real life, he would probably just point at the ceiling or something. Where's the front desk? He would point back in the direction Kevin just came from or something, like...
I don't need him to be in this film sucking all the fucking life out of it.
But, like, the thing is, though, at this time, like, Donald Trump was, to a lot of people, is what identified New York to them. Like, it was, they went hand in hand.
It was more like he was a cartoonish, like, Monopoly guy sort of character that owned a bunch of real estate. The extent to which he was popular or respected, I don't know.
He was probably all like, a lot of people are saying Home Alone 2 is the greatest film ever made, and that's, a lot of that is down to my performance. I'm not saying that, but a lot of people are saying it.
Because even that, I feel like that has a ring of truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
You think this movie's great because of him?
No. I'm wrong.
Do you mean that Donald Trump represents New York at the time?
No, I meant what it is that what I was saying is that I feel like Neth's performance captured what Trump actually feels.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, even though this scene is like a second long,
yeah,
I feel like for him it was like several days, and you know, like, like, I don't know, like, I nailed it on the first try.
Remember how The Rock had heat stroke and also food poisoning when he did his roles? Could you imagine Donald Trump? How they were just like, yeah, he got it on the first take because that's all we wanted. We didn't even want him there. Like, we're just done.
He had just bought the hotel and he insisted on a cameo or he wouldn't let them film there. I have no doubt that he probably hung around their craft services table, like, eating their food.
Oh, that's why he's in this?
Yeah.
He literally, like, forced them to?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. How Trump is
that? He demanded
that?
A cameo.
So on brand.
I think Chris Columbus wasn't keen on it, but he didn't really have a choice, I guess.
There's no way he fucking did this all on his first take. The guy can barely string a fucking sentence together.
Yeah, but this was like early 90s Trump, so
he's still the same fucking guy. Let's not make any kind of mistake that he was ever a fucking a paragon of virtue. Yeah,
no, I mean, like, his advanced years have made him perhaps less articulate than he even was before,
perhaps. Anyway, fuck him. He's only in the movie for fucking 3 seconds, and it's 3 seconds too long.
This is only, if I were to IMDb Donald Trump, I don't know, I get The Apprentice. This is a lot of time spending on Trump.
Roddy,
I'm happy to move on.
What? I got some news for you, my friend. Donald Trump has been in several movies, including the 1994 movie of The Little Rascals.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he was also in a 1990 movie called Ghosts Can't Do It, which is a borderline softcore porno movie. I think it's got Bo Derek in it. And no. He plays some kind of business associate. That film is fucking hot garbage.
No.
Wild.
Oh, God, I don't like the idea. I don't like the idea of picturing Bo Derek having to put up with him on set.
No, but that... fuck him.
Squeaky.
So yeah, he's at the hotel, yep. And hey, we get to meet Tim Curry, who plays the hotel's concierge.
I forgot he was in this.
I love Tim Curry. He makes everything slightly better.
I love Tim Curry too, but like, I don't know, his character takes a weird interest in Kevin, like, immediately. Yeah. For no apparent reason.
Do you know why he takes an interest in Kevin? I got a theory on this.
You have a theory.
Undercover Pennywise.
Yeah, maybe.
He's gonna fucking eat Kevin.
Okay.
That's his plan. Okay. This is what Pennywise is doing now.
This all goes back into the hell.
Wait, Pennywise just eats children, so why would he eat children in a fancy... I am analyzing this theory hard. It's like the worst place to eat children.
He got chased out of Maine, headed south, ended up in New York. A lot of storm drains for him to hang out in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got bored of hanging around with the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Decided to come up for some air. Took a job at the Plaza. Just biding his time.
Okay, I would say the one that could be undercover Pennywise is the guy that owns the toy store. Like, I feel like that's the angle. Or...
I mean, that doesn't really work because that guy didn't play Pennywise in the movie and Tim Curry did.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's true. I forgot that. I only know Tim Curry from... You did Rocky Horror Picture Show, or am I just bad at names?
No, he was Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror, and he was also in the movie Congo, that classic.
The other lady that works in the hotel in this movie married Cousin It in the Addams Family.
That's right, yeah, that's right. Oh man, if we ever do another Good With Numbers episode, Addams Family Values is going to be high up my pecking order.
Yeah.
Such a perfect sequel.
So like the Miami police report to the parents that he used the credit card, but like they, I guess, reported the credit card stolen because when Tim Curry later tries to charge the credit card, it comes up stolen. First of all, you're not supposed to charge the person until the end of their stay, so that's fucking inappropriate.
Ah, no, but most hotels will take a credit card when you check in.
Yeah, well, Kevin...
And run like a precursor charge on it.
The hold on
so
it.
So I can only assume that it must have gotten reported stolen somewhere in the time between Kevin checking in. It, like, so the police are trying to help them, but like reporting the card stolen is what leads to Kevin getting ejected from the hotel. So like... Good job, Miami police.
I admire this kid's hustle, though, right? He's so good at bullshitting people. He just talks his way into getting this room so effortlessly.
Yeah. Yeah.
He should probably just hang around in New York and get a job on Wall Street, right? Because this guy can bullshit.
Yeah, he slows down the tape player, making himself sound like a hostage taker. and somehow that works.
Yeah, man. What's the deal with them just being straight up like, okay, we'll give you a room, Mr. McAllister.
Peter McAllister, the father.
So good. I think that's what I'm going to introduce myself as.
I feel like you just want to try it out if someone like... Maybe you could get away with that back in the 90s. I have no idea.
And what I'm curious about is, like, I'm a little confused because maybe I just stopped paying attention. But, like, did Kevin ask for the presidential suite or did they just, or did they just give it to him because he didn't specify what type of room he wanted and they were just, you know, like, taking him for whatever?
He wanted a room with a big bed TV.
Yeah.
And one of those mini bars with cookies.
And that's, like, most motel, most hotel rooms. So
nowadays, I guess.
So like they were like, okay, presidential, like it feels like they picked the most expensive room on purpose just because he didn't specify.
Was this shot in location? Is this an actual suite? Maybe that's why. That's like,
oh yeah, this, they filmed this in a real Plaza suite, I think.
So then it was just advertising. That's why you get the best suite,
I guess.
Yeah.
Going back to the Miami scene a minute with the cop, his parents don't seem that stressed out.
No.
That they've lost their kid. I mean, in the first movie, they're like really losing their shit.
Yeah.
And they know where he is. They know he's at home. But in this movie, he could be literally anywhere in the world. And they seem pretty laissez-faire about the whole thing.
They didn't think he would get on a plane. They were just like, oh, he's probably at the airport, right?
Yeah, initially they thought that he just got left at O'Hare. That's what they thought.
But then surely somebody from O'Hare would have called Miami, you know?
Well, you think they would have called O'Hare and been like, hey, Do you have any lost children wandering around?
I guess. And then we're back at the hotel. We meet Rob Schneider, or at least somebody...
I also forgot he was in this.
Somebody that looks like Rob Schneider, but I don't think it is Rob Schneider.
Excuse me?
And the reason I don't think it's Rob Schneider is because this is a white guy.
No, it is Rob Schneider. You fucking got me.
He's playing a white bellhop. This can't be Rob Schneider.
This can't be Rob Schneider because this guy's white. And Rob Schneider never plays white people. He plays every ethnicity there is going, but fuck that guy. This was right around the time that he was doing that making copies sketch on SNL, which is just chronically unfunny, but...
I mean, I liked him in Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo, but mainly because everybody else in that movie is really funny.
I haven't seen that movie.
It's very stupid, but it's also got a lot of, like, other famous actors in it and stuff.
It also has a sequel.
I think European Gigolo is the sequel, right?
Yes, it's the second one, yes.
Yeah, Male Gigolo is the first movie.
Yes, we could conceivably cover that movie, I guess. I have it on DVD!
Megan. You can keep it. I might be busy that episode.
Can I change my answer from Human Centipede to Deuce Bigelow? You know what? I think I'd rather see the baby get run over.
I mean, it's pretty much equates to the same sensation.
Yeah.
This suite that Kevin gets, yeah, it's nice. Mm-hmm. He's a little fancy pants, this kid.
Well, I mean, I went to New York a couple of years ago with my friends, and it was one of the worst vacations I've ever had.
Wow, you really have just had bad time with New York, right?
No, I hate New York. Let me just put this out there. I hate New York.
So when we're allowed to move again,
yeah,
you and I,
okay,
and our respective whatevers will go to New York, and I guarantee you will have a good time.
Okay, because
I promise you.
I guess I do New York wrong, but we stayed in a hotel, and the only thing that was good about that trip was that room. And I will stand by that. So if you were ever to go to New York, you need to invest in a good hotel. And clearly Kevin did that.
I've done both ends of the spectrum in New York. I've stayed in some pretty nice places and I've stayed in some absolute dives as well. So yeah, no, you're right. But yeah, he goes to the pool and he's wearing his dad's swim shorts and they're huge. That's kind of like a funny sight gag, I guess.
I think he probably just bought those at the hotel along with the
flip-flops. No, I think they were in his dad's luggage.
Well, it wasn't his dad's luggage, though. It was like his dad's bag, man purse, whatever, that had like his wallet and stuff in it.
And he had a pair of swimming trunks in them.
Yeah, you don't carry your swim shorts everywhere you go. What?
No.
Always be prepared to jump in the pool.
But yeah, my interpretation of it is that he bought the swim trunks and the flip-flops at the hotel. Because you know how they have that little store that, like, when you forget to bring shit, you pay, like, four times as much in the little store to buy it? Yeah.
Yeah, he cannonballs in, and them shorts are coming right off.
It's so cute, because he walks up and he, like, pauses at the edge of the pool because he looks around because it's mostly old people. And he says... Would anybody mind if I practice my cannonballs? And they're like, no. My God.
So respectful.
Yeah. Just reading the IMDb trivia, Michael Jackson visited the set of this movie.
Of course he did.
Can't help but think it was on the day they filmed this scene, right? Hey, Macaulay, I just came by to see your little bum.
Maybe he suggested that as an addition to the script, where he's like, wouldn't it be funny if his shorts came off?
Oh, yeah. He would love that.
And they're like, thanks, Michael. Can you leave now?
Can you stop giving us notes, Michael? Yeah, so where's the clown?
It was the Pennywise.
Yeah. Yes!
It all came back.
It's
this
a
inflatable
clue.
Pool clown that he receives in like the opening scene of this film, and yet he's in the pool with no clown. It just feels like an oversight.
Well, he didn't seem particularly pleased with the inflatable clown to begin with, but
I wasn't either.
I think his grandma sent it to him.
That seems like a grandma gift. I don't know. I never knew my grandparents, so I never received inflatable pool clowns.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody feels sad for me. Nah, don't. No. Who cares?
Because it's not even like, yeah, it's just an inflatable clown with arms that move. So I don't know what you're supposed to do with that clown in a pool, but.
Yeah. Do you beat him up?
Yeah. So he goes back to the hotel room and he is just pigging out on so much room service.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. Do you think maybe not long after this movie, he lost a foot to diabetes?
Yeah, Kevin was definitely headed into diabetes territory.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of sugar is just insane, right?
It doesn't show him eating any actual meals, except the pizza that he gets in the limo.
But that's not an actual meal, that's pizza. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love pizza, but all this kid seems to eat is ice cream and pizza.
To have a young metabolism again.
Oh, this is going to come back to bite him on the ass when he's 35, I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah. I mean, in the first movie, he's 8 years old. He specifically says that. And then in this movie, he says he's 10 years old. So he's aged 2 years in 1 year.
Well, he could clearly have lied.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Maybe he was born in December.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so Tim Curry comes to check on him. There's a lot of people sneaking into bathrooms in this movie. Yep. That's not cool. He comes to check on him. So Kevin just rehashes the same shit he did in the first movie where he's like puppeteering this clown to make it look like it's his dad in the shower.
Yeah.
Where the fuck did this kid learn to puppeteer like this? Is he like working for Jim Henson or something?
I guess that goes back to him being like, he could definitely busker in New York, worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Like, he could definitely take care of himself.
He could hang out in Times Square with Elmo and Spider-Man and a bunch of crackheads. I don't know.
Right?
I mean, if we were to do a future flying Kevin McAllister, I mean, let's be honest here, he would probably be a robber of some kind. He would be like, doing mm-hmm. bank heists and stuff, but he wouldn't.
Man, that's a sad full circle story.
He wouldn't be like Harry and Marv. He would be like some cool ass safe cracker.
Do you know what Kevin McAllister becomes? He becomes Jigsaw from the Saw movies.
Yes.
Hello, detective. Many years ago, you failed to prevent the robbery of a toy store. Do you give up, or are you thirsty for more?
Oh my!
Well, that's what happens. His parents suppressed his trauma.
Yeah, he just ends up making bear trap head removing devices for a living.
I have a vague recollection when I was a kid of somebody, Fox, toying with the idea of doing a live-action Simpsons movie, and
ooh.
And Macaulay Culkin was named as the kid that would play Bart Simpson. Like, this was, you know, being what? Thrown around.
It'd be sick.
Yeah, I can see that.
Even at the time, I was like, no thanks.
That sounds like something they were tossing around in the early 90s. I seem to remember hearing about that as well, yeah.
I think he grew up too fast for that.
I don't know, real life Simpson just feels like nightmare fuel to me. I think I'm good without living in that world.
Yeah, no thanks. Don't need it. I mean, there was talk about them doing a live action Family Guy movie as well. I mean, you know, can it be worse than actual Family Guy? Maybe.
I don't know how they would pull off the dog. Would they just do like a Scooby-Doo type of thing
with
a CGI dog that talks on all fours or something, or just a guy in a creepy dog suit? How about that?
Danny DeVito in a dog suit.
Hell yeah.
Okay. I would love
okay,
that.
Now I'm on board for a Family Guy movie. That's,
got me back.
That's the route they want to go. Yeah, there's a lot of choral music in this movie. Do you guys notice this?
Yeah, both movies have it.
Fuck, it's really overdone in this one.
I like it.
It goes hand in hand with Christmas, you know?
Like... Oh, I just think it's so fucking twee. I don't know. Maybe that's just the Scrooge in me, but I just can't do it with the score of this film.
Yeah, Tim Curry thinks he walks in on somebody showering, and then he gives Kevin a complimentary limo ride with a pizza, and he goes from thinking he royally pissed off a customer to charging the credit card.
Oh.
Like, did he just not buy that whole shenanigans, or was this some kind of act of revenge against this person who he thinks he walked in on? Because, like, his motivation there is a little sketchy.
Yes.
Was he just checking the credit card? Did he think that Kevin's dad was, like, a scam artist?
Yeah, no, they don't really explain any of the hotel people. Like, automatically from the get-go, they're like, we just don't trust this boy. It's not even like, where's your dad? Are you okay? It's more like, he is up to no good.
Yeah, something's wrong with this kid.
Either that or Tim Curry was just trying to get Kevin out of the room so that he could lock him out or something. So we get to, judging by my notes, the toy store where Marv and Harry are hanging out.
So this is their grand plan, Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern. This is their grand plan, is to rob a toy store on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
I mean, they came all the way to New York to do this. They don't have toy stores in Chicago.
It's meant to be F.A.O. Schwartz or whatever. I don't know if they had multiple locations. I don't think hardly any of them exist anymore, but...
No, they certainly did in 1992. Yeah. And the reason I bet you that they didn't use F.A.O. Schwartz is because Big had already covered that ground. Because there's that whole thing in Big where he's playing on the piano and F.A.O. Schwartz and stuff. Yeah.
Well, Duncan's isn't real, is it? No, this is a fake toy store.
Yeah, it's fake. I mean, this place looks like fucking Santa's Workshop from Santa Claus the Movie. It's, all these toys are bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, where are all the Game Boys? Where's all the fucking tech toys?
This is
all, like, wooden crap.
That's just the display stuff. I mean, the Bay in Toronto does displays like that a lot. Like the creepy little dolls that are carolers that move robot. They're robots.
Kids don't give a shit about that. Kids want a PS5. Come on.
Yeah.
Let's be realistic.
Oh, boy, do they.
A PS5 in 1992.
It's so poor people who can't afford to shop in the store can walk by and look at the windows.
Mm-hmm.
No, honestly, you're doing a deep cut for Christmas. It's like...
That's Christmas in a nutshell, right?
No. The other day, there was like a newscast about the future of the Bay, and I turned to my husband and I was like, is the Bay even owned by a Canadian company? Like, they're not even Canadian anymore. And he was like, no, they're owned by an American company. And I was like, so why the fuck do we care?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I get that they're a staple of Toronto's landscape, but at the same time,
they sold out, man. We don't deal with sellouts. Ride or die.
So I think Marv peed in a gingerbread house.
Yeah, no, this is their grand plan, is to hide in this fucking, these little houses. They're in these two little Wendy house things. I'm like, oh, it's nice that they actually shot in Joe Pesci's home. Yeah. Also, side note, this is the same plot as Bad Santa.
Oh, is it?
This is how they pull the robberies in Bad Santa.
Oh, Billy Bob Thornton. I haven't even seen that.
Oh, okay. So the setup is that Billy Bob Thornton plays Santa Claus, like a mall Santa, and Tony Cox plays his elf, and the idea is that Tony Cox hides in the toy department until the mall closes, and then lets Billy Bob Thornton back in so they can loot the place. They just totally stole that from this movie.
Wait, a 1992 movie stole from Bad Santa?
No, Bad Santa stole from this.
Oh, okay, I was like, what?
By the way,
I'm confused by time right now.
You fucking Coen brothers stealing ideas from Home Alone.
Home Alone 2 was stealing ideas from Home Alone.
Sure, and Home Alone is stealing ideas from Last House on the Left, but, well, you know, that's another story.
So I don't know if they stay, because then they run into Kevin at some point.
No, well, before that, Kevin has like this whole thing where he meets the toy store owner.
Yeah.
He's in a toy store, right?
Yep.
With his dad's credit card.
Yep.
And a fucking envelope full of cash.
Yep.
And all he buys is soap and a map. What the fuck is wrong with this kid?
Well, I guess it's more so that he's already, like, full of candy and nonsense. So he's like, I guess I should just chill.
Do you know what? He was probably just saving his money for Toys R Us down the street.
Yeah, there you go.
Way cooler toys.
Like, he doesn't even go Christmas shopping for people. You'd think he would do that.
Maybe he just can't cope with crowds. I mean,
Woody, his family kind of sucks at this point still.
That is true.
So much for those ornaments he was making out of fish hooks. No, wait, that was the first movie.
So yeah, he bumps into Harry and Marv outside the store, and there's a story on the IMDb trivia for this movie that Culkin asked Joe Pesci why he never smiled, and Pesci just told him to shut up.
He's like, shut up.
I kind of love that. I just like the idea of like Joe Pesci just throwing shade at this little boy.
His comment was somewhere along the lines of, well, everybody was pampering this kid, but not me, and I think he liked that, and I was like, what do you mean you think he liked that? Did you ever actually ask his opinion on how he felt about that, or do you just assume that he was okay with it?
It's a lot of pressure that you're projecting onto a child.
Yes.
I don't know. I kind of enjoy telling kids to shut up. I just like the idea of Joe Pesci going full fucking Goodfellas on him. Like, oh,
why am I not talking? Well, that's none of your fucking business, Macaulay.
Well, in the first movie, I guess, wasn't the story goes that it was filmed back to back. Like, it was filmed after he had just done, I guess, it was either Goodfellas or Casino or something.
No, it would have been Goodfellas. It was the same year.
Yeah, and he kept accidentally dropping actual F-bombs on the set of Home Alone. Like, he was trying to do the fake swearing, and it kept turning into actual swearing because he was cursing so much in the Goodfellas movie that it was a harsh transition, apparently.
Have you ever seen the video of Joe Pesci, like, literally assaulting a Sesame Street puppet?
No.
Okay, so there's your YouTube homework, folks.
I watched part of the Ronald Grump thing where he voiced a puppet that was based on Donald Trump, but it wasn't that interesting, honestly. It was just about a dumbass puppet building a trash can tower.
Yeah, trash can towers. Yeah, tell me about it. A little bit of fucking sexual assault happens here. Oh no, is it later on when Kevin like grabs that girl's ass to get away?
Well, we meet her first when Marv is running around with duct tape on his hand and he tries to grab her. He accidentally sticks to her purse and then tries to pull it away from her, and then she kind of kicks his ass a little bit.
But is it here that Kevin actually, like, you know, prods her in the butt?
He pinches her ass and then she turns around, and because he didn't know that she had met Marv before, so it's just a lovely coincidence that it's the same woman that Marv tried to mug earlier.
He manages to, he manages to get away and he runs off into Central Park. And I don't know if you guys have seen the movie, but where he runs to in Central Park is the same place that Mel Gibson's kid gets abducted in the movie Ransom.
Wild. Really?
Specific reference.
Never seen it, but
I was kind of hoping Gary Sinise was hanging around just waiting to snatch Kevin and like duct tape him to a bed and make him listen to Billy Corgan music. If you haven't seen Ransom, I guess that's going to be wasted on you, but fucking great movie, by the way.
He buys beads like a fucking cartoon character.
Yeah, and he drops them right in front of these guys and yet they still go running into it. Like, fucking hell.
Yeah, that was the point where it started turning into a Warner Brothers film.
Yeah, so after he's got away, he kind of like mutters to himself, "I want to go home, Mom, where are you?"
Well,
like, you know where she is, dude. She's in Miami.
Yeah,
Just go to the fucking airport and speak to someone.
Yeah, he runs back to the hotel, except Tim Curry is there, and then points out that he committed credit card fraud. Or, you know, he mentions a stolen credit card, and then Kevin tries to, he runs off and he's like, "I've committed credit card fraud." And I was thinking, what'd you think you were doing? Like,
and then he does like, they rehash the gag from the first movie of him using the old gangster film, which, by the way, isn't a real movie.
What?
But I enjoy that, though.
Oh, yeah. He runs upstairs and plays the movie. And then, you've been smooching with my brother.
Yeah, a little bit gay panic going on in this scene.
Yeah, because one of my notes was, who's got a case of the not gays?
Yeah, that was kind of, I mean, I guess, you know, it's the 90s, but fucking fuck off with that nonsense. He manages to get away from them. Meanwhile, we cut back to Florida and the family are all sat in this shitty motel.
Yeah.
And they're watching It's a Wonderful Life on the TV and it's in Spanish.
Yeah.
And in the first movie, the gag is that they're all watching It's a Wonderful Life and it's in French because they were in Paris, right? So that makes sense. You're watching a Spanish dub of this movie and you're all sat there befuddled by it. Change the fucking channel.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that motel only got one channel on their TV or something. I also have to say that I was a little disappointed that the scene with the TV in the hotel room, in the original movie, Kevin also had firecrackers. So he sets off the firecrackers when the bullets on the TV are going. So it adds to the realism. He didn't do that in this one. He just kind of blared the TV. I don't know. Felt weaker.
I mean, I don't buy it for a second, but
felt like a weaker version of it. But it is funny when they're crawling into the hallway and all the other people are just peeking out their doors looking at them like they're out of their fucking minds.
The thing, they brought in a lot of good actors in it, like all like Tim Curry, like they can sell that scene of them crawling on the ground, like it's just perfectly hilarious.
Oh yeah, Tim Curry's amazing.
We cut to Kevin in the park and hey, this movie really likes stigmatizing homeless people and the mentally ill and prostitutes and New York City cab drivers.
Oh yeah, that's right, we get a
New
from
York
a child's
scary.
Perspective yeah. Everybody is scary.
New York is terrifying. I stand by my statement.
ladies of the night, cab drivers. Who was the other?
I'm really impressed that Kevin was able to get to Central Park. Because when I took my friends to New York, I wanted to go to Central Park. I ended up in a sex museum. So I don't know.
Like, you know what? I fucking know where that sex museum is as well. It's right near the Flatiron Building, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. And to be honest, there's that room and there's a bunch of boobs. It's like an inflatable castle, but it's a boob room.
That's great.
Really?
Highly recommend.
So you got lost in a sex museum. Somehow you've managed to find your way there.
So there's like a bouncy castle made out of boobs? Is that what you're
saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you can pay $10 for like 3 minutes. And it's such a ripoff.
Worth it.
Big boobs.
That's everybody's favorite Instagram story, I'm sure, once they go in there.
Honestly, it's it was actually pretty cool, but we were late for a Broadway show. Like, we weren't going to make it to Central Park in time.
Mm.
So then we were walking past, and my friends were like, "That is a sex museum?" So yeah, we learned quite a bit about the history of, like, BDSM and, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, we got to jump on some boobs. So you know what? I'm not even mad, but I don't know how I messed up so badly, so good on Kevin.
we get this god-awful subplot here with where he meets Brenda Fricker's homeless lady, the pigeon lady that we've seen before, and this just stops this fucking movie dead for a good 15 minutes.
I mean, I like her character, but I also recognize that as an example of a homeless person, it just kind of feels... I mean, she's based on the bird lady from Mary Poppins, and it kind of shows.
Yeah, blatant Mary Poppins steal.
It just feels like they're trying to make it quaint that she's homeless or something.
No, I mean, it's just a lift from the first movie, right? Kevin needs this kind of, sad adult character to project upon.
I
like Brenda Fricker. I think she's a great actress. She doesn't need to be in this film at all.
I just thought... Does Kevin actually have any friends in the first one?
I don't think so.
No? That's really sad then. So
there's nobody, like, he doesn't seem to feel compelled to call any friends. I mean, mind you, in the first movie, it doesn't seem like anybody exists outside their neighborhood because, like, all of their neighbors are gone on vacation, and that's supposed to explain why they can't reliably contact their neighbors or whatever, but it just, like, he doesn't have any school friends.
Starting to feel for this kid more and more.
Yeah.
She takes him to go watch the orchestra, and they're like watching it from the rafters like fucking ceiling cat.
Yeah, she says, I've seen all the greats here, and then she lists a bunch of people, including like Ella Fitzgerald, and I was like, how old is this person?
Exactly. She says Ella Fitzgerald, Pavarotti, Frank Sinatra.
How the fuck long has she been homeless?
The New Radicals, Len, Vitamin C, she's seen them all.
And she, like... He asks her about herself, and she talks about getting her heart broken, but that's not why she's homeless. Like,
yeah,
she doesn't explain why she... I mean, I guess it doesn't matter, but, like, she doesn't explain why she's homeless. She just says that she got her heart broken, and I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure that's not the reason that you're homeless.
Why do the adults in these movies confide their intimate feelings and problems to Kevin McAllister? He's not a licensed therapist. He is 10 years old. Stop expecting him to fix you.
I feel like she left out a few details from her story.
Yeah, it was really weird where, like, Kevin's going on and, like, giving advice of how to, like, recover, and everything would be better if you listen to this child. And I'm like, what do you... First off, she's talking about, like, love and, like, romantic love as an adult. I'm like, what do you know?
See, what she needs is social supports and some kind of, you know, help getting back on her feet and getting another job.
No, yeah, it's a very much a weird portrayal of what it is to be homeless. And it's, I don't know, like, it didn't really do anything. And how it ends is very weird. This whole subplot, it's one of the ones where I think as a kid, initially I would think it's, like, really, like, sweet and sincere. But then you realize it is through just, like, this rose-colored lens. But this is not, Home Alone 2 is not the movie that's going to be tackling poverty.
No, because at the end, I mean, his family's rich, but he gives her a Christmas ornament, so...
Which they seed in a lot, those two turtle doves. I mean, turtle doves?
I mean, that's sweet, but his family's rich. His dad's got a lot of money. He could have went to his dad and been like, hey, I met this homeless lady in the park who needs a second chance at life. Do you have any ideas about how to help this woman? Instead of like, here's a Christmas ornament.
That's the thing, is just... Did Kevin spend all of his dad's money?
Basically.
They broke now? Like, is that it? But I mean, when the parents are checking into the hotel, they start giving them attitude. Like,
yeah.
How do you let just a child check into your hotel? Like, that's so unprofessional. It's like, how are you not going after the airline?
Well, I mean, they try and fucking blame the hotel for this, but this one is on them. They are fucking blame shifting losing their kid onto the hotel, but really, take some fucking responsibility.
They should have learned from the first time around and not let him out of their sight. Also, Peter unplugged his own fucking alarm clock, so that's on him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I love when Catherine O'Hara slaps Tim Curry, though. That just is amazing.
I think anyone just could watch Catherine O'Hara do anything, and it'd be a movie. Like, honestly, I could watch, like, a super cut of this movie of just Catherine O'Hara, and I'd be, like, satisfied.
Yeah, so Kevin learns a valuable lesson from Brenda Fricker. I don't really know what it was, because I kind of tapped out here. And then he goes to the children's hospital the mm-hmm. toy store is donating a load of money to.
Yep.
And he's kind of standing on the street, and I feel like he's gloating that, A, he's rich. Rich and healthy, and there's these sick kids looking out the window, and he says you can mess with a lot of things, but you can't mess with kids on Christmas. I mean, he should tell that to Jimmy Kimmel, right, when he's shown all those videos of those kids getting empty boxes and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, rather than trying to fix his own situation, is like, I'm gonna go foil a toy store heist.
Yeah, he goes back to his uncle's empty house. Mm-hmm. And basically he constructs a death trap.
Yep.
In like, what, a couple of hours?
Yeah.
Really quick, though, on his little, like, plan, like, his Operation Ho Ho Ho.
Yeah.
I definitely drew Christmas trees exactly the same way as he did, so it's very convincing handwriting to me. I'm very proud of the prop team.
I don't have a problem with him drafting up the plans to do this. What I have a problem with is him executing this plan within mere minutes.
Yeah, and keep in mind, his mother went up to that front door. If she had tried the doorknob...
Oh, shit, yeah.
There would have been some injury involved.
She'd be dead.
She'd be dead.
Maybe he's so good at this because by the time Home Alone ended, he realized, oh, maybe this could happen again and I should prepare. So, you know, like while his family does other things in his room, he probably does this on his spare time.
I don't know. In that first movie, he's using like a lot of stuff from around the house that he's already familiar with. In this movie, he's like setting up nail guns, all this kind of shit. It's bullshit.
You just familiar yourself with all the bunch of tools in his house.
Yeah. I think so, man.
A smart kid.
I think, yeah, sure, he's a resourceful kid, but like literally, does he know to pour kerosene in a toilet and like saw ladders and stuff? It just seems...
It requires an intricate series of events in order for his traps to work, much like the little teeter-totter thing that he puts inside the toy store.
I'm just saying, Kevin also has fate and luck on his side. There you go.
It took me like fucking 2 weeks to make a banister for my stairs, and this kid makes like a fucking deathly fun house in 3 hours. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it.
He's a child prodigy of deadly carpentry.
Side note, when the McAllisters rock up at that hotel, Tim Curry offers them a suite.
Oh, yeah.
And he says it was recently vacated by the Countess of Worcestershire.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm a pedantic fuck, I looked that up. And it can't have been that recent because she died in 1565, so...
Damn.
So that's like a passive-aggressive dig. So this room has been locked up for many, 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 many years.
Maybe it's haunted.
It's haunted. He gives them the haunted suite. Also, I have to point out that, like, this suite is huge. It's got, like, two floors, but they're all sleeping in the same fucking room at the end of the
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
They're all crammed into one room. I'm like...
Yeah.
They miss each other.
Dumbasses don't know how to hotel. Also, we cut back to the toy store that they're robbing, and they like smash open this sick kids fund, and they're acting like they just won Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but this thing's just full of like $5 bills. There is literally maybe a couple of grand in there max. It feels like this was a lot of effort for not a lot of reward.
Yep.
Are they smart sticky bandits?
I don't think they ever are.
I think Joe Pesci is maybe meant to be the brains of this operation, but yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I do like the moment where Kevin has the brick with the note on it, and he was like, here we go, another Christmas in the trenches, and then he hurls the brick through the window to set off the security alarm, which is actually a pretty clever thing to do.
Yeah, I guess that's, yeah, I mean, like I say, he's smart, but...
Also, for it being New York, the police presence is very slow.
Oh, it's not just the police presence, it's just the presence of anybody at all. Like, this is like a deserted New York, because I don't care what hour of day it is, there is always somebody around in New York. I mean, I've wandered through that city at like 3 a.m. in the morning, and there are people around.
Yeah, and this is Manhattan.
Exactly.
Surely, and it's right across, I don't know, it's near Central Park, you'd think somebody would have seen him hurling a brick.
Marv says, this ain't like the last time, and I'm thinking, it is exactly like the last time. The last 30 minutes of this film kind of bored me shitless, because...
Yep, my notes pretty much run out pretty quickly after this.
Yeah, we just get like a cavalcade of violence now, and...
There's a little teeter-totter, which Harry steps onto it, and then Marv jumps onto it, and just hurls Harry into the air, and he falls on a car.
Yeah, he goes like 20 feet in the air and smashes through a car, just walks it off.
And I wrote, we have achieved problem child 2 physics.
Yeah, this movie really does operate on that fucking
and
mentality.
From this moment onwards in the film, it's all cartoon.
Kind of semi-interesting thing about this movie is it actually sparked a debate in the British Parliament in the early 90s about violence in movies for kids, where some more conservative members of the government were very keen to outlaw these movies, because the UK was very much a nanny state at that point. It was like, you couldn't show nunchucks in a film. So in that first Ninja Turtles movie, any scenes involving Michelangelo with nunchucks were excised from the film.
Aww.
Headbutting in a movie meant that your movie got the highest prohibitive rating. Select sections of the press tried to blame Child's Play 3 on the murder of a toddler. There was a very famous case in the UK, the murder of James Bulger, which young boys abducted a kid from a mall and basically killed him by some railroad tracks. And they tried to pin it on Child's Play 3, even though there was no evidence that these two boys had even seen that movie. Stuff like Reservoir Dogs, True Romance were all banned on video. This was all like a knock-on from Home Alone 2 having this ridiculous scene of prolonged violence.
Yeah, I mean, I get it because it's real objects in a live-action movie, but you don't have the actual consequences of the injury, so kids watching it...
This stuff is easily emulated, right?
Yeah, so kids watching it might not understand what happens when somebody gets hit in the head with a brick or gets thrown onto a car. But I mean, there's a lot of action movies that are like that, so I guess, I don't know. It gets into a weird area.
But I see what you're going, though. It depends on the audience, because it's true. If you're a kid and you saw this, and you have like a brick, you would think, if I throw this brick, maybe it's like the movie I watch. Again, it really depends on the parents' involvement, and like, you're letting your kid watch this,
yeah,
be prepared to have a discussion about it.
It's like all those kids that jump off their roof holding an umbrella because they think they can use the umbrella as a parachute, and nope.
Wait, that doesn't work. Oh shit.
Yeah, I think
the amount of kids I've pushed off roofs just with umbrellas, oh man, I'm in trouble.
In that case, we should be suing Mary Poppins.
Yeah,
Mary Poppins made me do it. We should outlaw that as well. And like, all right, okay, yeah, there's a lot of fucking ridiculous violence in this section, but at one point Marv gets electrocuted,
yeah,
and he turns into a skeleton.
That's classic.
I fucking love that.
Yeah, oh,
that
yeah.
Never fails to make me laugh when somebody turns into a skeleton in a movie.
I mean, Daniel Stern is just owning it in every scene. Like, and I do love, and I do, aside from the disturbing amount of head trauma, the brick scene is really funny, because Kevin keeps throwing the bricks and Harry just keeps stepping aside, but Marv, for whatever reason, can't dodge a brick.
He takes these bricks like a champ. Did you guys see the video on YouTube that was doing the rounds a few years ago where they actually consulted a physician,
yeah,
about the injuries received in this film? The amount of times that these guys die,
yep,
in the course of these two movies is insane. I think they rack up like 15, 16 deaths each. Just made me think, is this like an Edge of Tomorrow scenario?
Yeah.
Do you think maybe that they're dying and having to start again at the bottom of the house?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I mean, I'd watch that movie. I mean, this is this movie, just from a different perspective.
Yeah, because they fall, like, at one point they fall like 20 feet or something, like, and just hit the ground, like, flat on.
They don't realize that they're actually superheroes or have, like, superhuman powers.
Yeah.
It's Unbreakable.
It's a superhero or supervillain origin story.
Where they're so bad at being bad that they end up being good and they're unbreakable for it.
They kind of stumble into the heroics. This scene just goes on so long. It's like maybe a good 10 minutes longer than the sequence in the first one. But I guess like audiences just responded to that scene in the first one where he's defending the house. They
yeah.
like watching this wee psychopath brutalize these two clowns, so I guess they just doubled down on
trash his uncle's house.
Doesn't this house have neighbors? Like, the lights are on in the house next door. Isn't somebody hearing this?
Maybe they're just like asshole neighbors where like they hear something like, oh, I'm sure they're fine.
I don't know. I think I would be inclined to be banging on the wall telling them to shut the fuck up.
You have to play something they haven't heard before. Like, you have to play, if it's not construction noise, I'm sure they're aware of it. No, yeah, never mind. Construction at night is the worst. So, yes, someone should have been there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they end up in Central Park. They manage to get a hand on Kevin. And holy shit, Joe Pesci actually has a gun. I was
yep.
like, damn, this movie pulled out a firearm in its third act. That's pretty extreme for a kid's film.
But it's covered in goo.
Yeah, he can't even use it. I was thinking, is this the same gun that he used to shoot Spider in Goodfellas? But I guess maybe not.
That'd be pretty funny.
Then we get a little Deus Ex pigeon lady here. She shows up and throws birdseed on these guys.
Real birdseed, real birds.
I mean, they set it up. It was just kind of like, all right.
There was a note in IMDb trivia that pigeon actually did fly into Daniel Stern's mouth.
Oh, that's gross.
And he was appalled.
Yeah. understandably.
Mm-hmm.
It was actual birdseed and they were actual pigeons, so these two guys were actually showered with pigeons in that scene.
Do you think they actually like went and be like, yeah, there's a lot of pigeons here, we'll just shoot it here? Or did they actually hire someone that was like well-versed in pigeon training?
Oh, no, they were probably trained pigeons, but, you know, pigeons that were trained to peck seeds off of people, probably.
It's like a specific... I know, like, there's like dogs and cats and pets, but pigeons is so specific that I was slightly impressed by the sheer amount of pigeons in this scene, in this movie.
I mean, people keep pigeons, right? People race pigeons.
Oh, like, okay.
That's
the
thing. Pigeons are easy to breed. That's why... That's because they're technically a feral species. They didn't originate from this continent. People brought them here because back in the day when people in cities couldn't raise chickens, so they would raise pigeons on the roof for eating, for racing, for pets. They were just an all-purpose, easy to breed.
You know why pigeons are easy to breed? Because they're all sluts.
yeah. They fuck. They lay eggs.
Pigeons like to fuck.
They have very short lives.
I did not know that.
They live fast. There you go.
Live fast, die young.
Fast and furious, but with pigeons.
Live fast, die young, leave a good-looking pigeon.
Yeah.
so yeah, they get apprehended by the cops after this, and... back to jail for you guys, I guess.
Oh yeah, because Kevin took all those Polaroids and there was like an audio tape and...
I mean, I'm kind of curious as to how these guys even broke out of jail in the first place. They're such like bumbling incompetents. It's just like...
Well, judging by anything that's security in this movie, I assume they just walked out.
Judging by the Chicago cops in the first movie, if they were in like a Chicago jail, it doesn't shock me at all that they broke out.
Every adult in this movie is a fucking idiot. It's kind of... It's pretty alarming.
Except for that Miami cop. He seems cool.
Hell yeah.
I think that's a children's film staple, though. Like, most adults in children's film make dumb decisions, right? Or they die in the beginning. So props for Catherine O'Hara surviving longer than most.
Just props to Catherine O'Hara. You could have stopped.
Yeah.
No, I love her.
This movie deserved to have more Catherine O'Hara in it than it did. And they actually, I think, did reshoots to add scenes where she's looking for Kevin because she was concerned that her character didn't seem concerned enough about where Kevin was. So she roams the street. And then I guess, I don't know if the Christmas tree thing was added later or if that was always in there. It's a nice scene, but...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she ends up finding Kevin at the Rockefeller Christmas tree.
Which is a real crapshoot of a chance, right? I mean, she just Absolutely. Narrowly missed him at the townhouse, like her brother's townhouse. If she had waited around for like two more minutes, she would have seen Kevin and he would have been like, don't touch that doorknob.
I've seen Catherine O'Hara in the flesh on stage and she's awesome. It was at the Martin Scorsese made a documentary about SCTV.
Mm-hmm.
And they did like a roundtable discussion at the Elgin Theater.
Oh, yeah.
And we managed to snag tickets for it. And it was Catherine O'Hara. Rick Moranis was there, which was an absolute fucking dream for me. Eugene Levy, just all of those SC guys. And we were like, we had really bad seats up in the nosebleeds,
mm-hmm.
but there was a few empty seats down at the floor level.
Mm-hmm.
So we got ushered, like in a break, we got ushered to go and sit down in these seats, but we had to hang back at the back of the auditorium for a bit
mm-hmm.
while they were setting up and stood like literally 10 feet away from us. We got to watch Martin Scorsese like setting up the video village and stuff, which was like insanely cool. But I digress. So yeah, they go back to the hotel, stay in the hotel, and then they wake up on Christmas morning. And for some reason, there's like literally a million presents in the lounge of this hotel.
I think it's because of the Toy Story. Toy Story.
And they come to life.
Toy Store.
Small soldiers.
Yeah.
How did they get all those presents in there without anybody? You've got literally 14 people sleeping in a hotel room and they managed to sneak all this shit in there.
Well, I mean, that's how they snuck it in, is that everybody was sleeping in one fucking room. So, you know, the tree was downstairs. Apparently, you can see that Fuller has wet himself. I couldn't because the version I was watching, I couldn't see it. But
I mean, that's the gag, though, because he's sleeping on his own in a massive queen bed and the rest of them are on the floor, right?
Mm-hmm. I love that joke. That kid just pees the bed so that nobody else can sleep on the bed with him.
Smart thinking.
He's marking his territory.
He's marking his territory. Oh my god, there should have been a spin-off movie with about Fuller. Why wasn't there? He's so adorable. They could have done that. I like him in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's great in Scott Pilgrim. Yeah. He plays Wallace, the roommate.
He's Wallace.
Right? Yeah. So Kevin runs out to give Pigeon Lady this ornament, as we've already discussed. Is this going to turn into some weird Harold and Maude shit where he falls in love with a lady 40 years older than him?
He grows up and then goes in search of the bird lady so he can marry her.
It does set it up, though.
Does he have like a fetish for women covered in bird shit or something? I don't know. Let's just add this onto his therapy bill, right? This is like...
Yeah.
If you do went that route, though, it does set it up because they had this long scene. Again, what Megan's talking about, her... Ew! Now that whole scene has a different context. like a man broke up or unable to love again, and like he's telling her you should try. Ew.
Yeah, she's blatantly grooming him.
The scene, this is something I never noticed before, the scene where they're opening the gifts, you can hear Frank's wife in the background say something along the lines of, save the paper, we could use it next year.
Oh man, they really are cheapskates.
That's commitment to a character right there, because I've been watching this movie for years and I've never caught that line, so kudos to her, whatever her name was.
Mm-hmm. It's a character trait. There are a lot of people that do save paper. Like, you open up specific... Like, what type of Christmas open packager are you? Are you, like, the ripper-upper? Or you dedicatedly open up, like, where the tape is? And, like, you know...
Oh, no, I'm a ripper.
I'm a ripper.
Depends on the gift. Depends on the gift for me.
How'd you know before you open it?
No. If I really like the paper and if it's wrapped carefully, then I'll try to carefully open the paper.
All right, guys, we now know that... Megan will be judging our gifts when we give it to her, so make sure that your wrapping paper is real nice, because me and Neth will just rip it no matter what. It doesn't matter.
Hell yeah.
Put it in a Walmart bag.
The next party, it's just like, wow, these gifts are so well wrapped.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if we ever do a Secret Santa, you're going to know that it's mine by the fact that it is just wrapped in newspaper with fucking sellotape around it.
Yeah.
See, like, I go the classic, you get a bag and then just stuff it with tissue paper.
Yeah.
Oh no, I fucking hate bags. Bags is such a cop out for.
You gotta feel the, like.
Yeah, bags is such a cop-out. That's such an adult way of giving gifts, is to give it to them in a bag.
It's okay. Don't you get the other route of, like, you talk to, it's either your grandma, and they come, like, come here, they whip out their hand, and you give it a shake, and then all of a sudden there's money. Nope.
Wow, I feel like I missed a trick with this grandparents thing.
Yeah,
no, I don't know.
Amazing.
They just palm you off money? Wow.
Yeah, they do it for kids. It's like, oh, I wasn't able to get you anything, so here's, like, a $20.
What are you talking about? I do that with my own daughter.
I never got gifts. It's not a
grandparent thing. What do you want for Christmas? You don't know? Here's money.
I got snow tires for my mom last year.
That's a great gift.
Right? That is a really solid gift.
Practical.
That's a great gift.
So good.
It's only when you're older that those gifts like that are just perfect.
I didn't think I would be so excited about tires, but here I am.
Rody, you think tires is a perfect gift? I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
I don't drive, though.
Tires, but just well, tires.
Too bad. Now you're going to have tires.
I'll just use it to go tobogganing. That's what you can use it for,
nice.
Right?
Nice. Good thinking.
That is
good thinking.
Good idea.
I mean, having a set of tires puts you that much closer to having a car, I guess.
You just have
to collect the rest of the car.
Every year, Neth is going to get Roddy a new part to a car.
And it is built together.
But I'm not going to tell you how to assemble it. You're going to have to figure that out yourself.
It's like IKEA. IKEA, like the car company.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
That's clever. Yeah, and then I guess we get the closing gag of this movie is that Kevin spent $976 on room service.
Nah.
Holy shit, that's a lot of money.
I hate to know what the room costs.
Oh, I think we looked it up, and like the most expensive suite in the Plaza in 2020 anyway was going to run you about $30,000 a night.
Oh god, that's like an... Well, I was going to say that's like an education. That's an education in, like, Canada.
That is my salary.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Kevin was only there for, I don't know, a couple of nights, which is probably... I'm sure his dad's credit card has an insane limit on it, but I don't know if it's that high.
Well, didn't they say, like, after they came back and they were bitching at them for leaving Kevin or letting Kevin run away? He was just like, oh, you're getting everything complimentary.
Yeah,
you know,
they gave them an even bigger suite.
$976 on room service, and it was all on sugar items. This kid is dead in a year.
Like, how much does a cookie cost? Like, a cookie would be like $5 there.
Yeah, at a hotel, yeah, everything's like...
Yeah, like a mini bar Snickers is like $10, right? And I guess that's the end of the movie. I don't like this film, and I'll tell you why I don't like this film, because it just feels like such a cash cow sequel. They didn't really do anything particularly new in terms of jokes. They just ported all of the jokes over to a new location. It just feels like so lazy. I know we say that a lot about movies on this show, but this especially just feels like, I don't know.
The funny thing is, though, as a kid, I actually watched this first, so for some reason, I think I like this more, even though, or I watch this more when it comes on TV rather than the first one.
I mean, look, it's an easy watch, right? I mean, all right, it's 2 hours long, but it's not a tough movie to get through. It's never kind of overly boring, apart from that Brenda Fricker sequence.
That's usually when you pass out from, like, Christmas dinner, though. You're just like, oh, this is it. And then that's when you take your nap and you wake up when he's in the battle. Or you could sleep through that part, too, you know? Let's just...
Did you guys see how much Macaulay Culkin got paid for this movie, by the way?
A lot. It was, like, a shit ton of money.
So he got paid $4.5 million to star in this movie, which in 2020 money is a... about $8 million.
Beautiful.
He was 10 years old.
Like, even with that money, I feel like he's had he seems like he had a rough life.
I mean, his dad stole that money, right? That was kind of the deal, was that his dad was just siphoning off the money for his own... Kieran Culkin gave an interview to Maron on What the Fuck recently, and Culkin talked quite a lot about his dad and just saying how his dad was a failed actor, so he just projected all of his failure onto his kids and like pushed them into the limelight. Kind of sucks.
That was slimy.
Yeah. I mean, the first movie was more of a be careful what you wish for sort of situation, whereas this one was, oops, I'm in New York, so I'm just going to stay here.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it was him being like, fuck all y'all. I mean, put in the context of him being traumatized from the previous movie, then yeah, I guess it makes sense. But other than that, he's being kind of a little prick. Like,
yeah, he's a little psycho.
Like, he didn't need the presidential suite, did he? but I mean, he might not have known any better. But he's probably stayed in hotel rooms before. His family seems to travel a lot, so it's not like he doesn't understand how hotels...
Not with him, they don't.
Technically, they're a family that seems to go on a vacation every year, so maybe he has been on that vacations, or it's always been that crappy motel one.
I mean, maybe he just acts up so much when they go on vacation that this was all part of their plan, just to leave him behind, right?
I would.
Oh, you know what this movie was lacking? John Candy.
Yep.
Oh, he's such a joy in that first movie.
He is. He's basically a slightly different version of his character from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, he's the polka guy in that movie, right?
The polka version of that guy instead of his character in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles sold like junk jewelry or something, didn't he? I can't remember.
Shower curtains.
Shower curtain rings. Yes, shower curtains and shower curtain rings. I just watched that movie recently, too. I can't believe I forgot that.
That's a good John Hughes movie.
Yeah.
Maybe John Hughes' best movie, actually, now that I think about it. Anyway, that was our episode on Home Alone 2.
Hooray!
I guess it's festively timed, right? Given that this episode's going out on Christmas Eve.
I don't know what to say after that. Do you want us to sing this?
Yeah, sure. Maybe give me some carols.
Have a Merry Christmas.
Wait, it's Christmas here? Do they say Christmas in this movie?
Yeah.
Yes,
Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah.
The 90s.
Are you kidding me? Did you miss the Christmas iconography throughout this film? It's kind of laid on pretty thick.
It's before people really started in on the happy holidays thing. It was the 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean,
sure. Mm-hmm.
Also, I think Chris Columbus passed up Christmas Vacation to do this film. Or sorry, the first film.
Yeah, that's right.
They offered it, but he didn't like Chevy Chase, so he decided to do Home Alone instead.
Oh.
Does anybody like Chevy Chase?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question.
Stories of that guy being a dick are fucking legendary.
Yeah, I'd believe it.
That was kind of his thing, right?
Yeah, I guess. I think, like, Pierce Hawthorne is a pretty accurate depiction of just what Chevy Chase is in real life.
Sorry, there's one thing that's, like, bugging me about this is just how they managed to get 5 of these. like somehow people like the formula of a kid getting stuck at home.
It's, like I said, it's a cash cow and they milk it. You know?
5 times?
But wasn't Home Alone 3 like a monumental flop, and that's why the other two movies ended up going straight to video, straight to TV?
I know multiple people that like the third one best. I don't know why.
I can't understand that. I've never seen it. Yeah. I heard that it absolutely stinks.
Yeah, I was wrong. French Stewart is in the fourth one. Third one is the one where the kid is sick, and they He has a toy truck that has some kind of important computer chip or some shit in it. I don't know.
2000s movie? It feels like a 2000s movie.
Something of incredible importance to national security or something. And there's people trying to break in to get this toy truck.
I mean, that doesn't sound like a Home Alone movie, for right? Why are they bringing stuff like fucking national security and stuff into it?
I don't know.
It's the sticks. It's the third.
Yeah, that just feels like a stretch.
When was the third one made, though?
97, the third one came out.
Oh, wow. For some reason I hear like tech stuff, I'm like 2000.
Maybe I'll try to find the fifth one and watch it.
I mean, good luck to you.
The fourth one was horrific.
The whole series is on Disney Plus, I think.
It is.
Yeah, that sounds about
it
right.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, all five of them.
These are all Fox movies, so they'll be on Disney.
Malcolm McDowell.
Wait, what?
He's in Home Alone, The Holiday Heist.
Malcolm McDowell? As in, like, Clockwork Orange Malcolm McDowell?
Yeah, he's part of a trio.
Wow. Talk about slumming it, right?
I mean, work if you can get it, I guess. But it's Malcolm McDowell. He can have... You would think he could have any role that he wants.
Sure, and that's why he chose to do Tank Girl. I love Tank Girl,
I remember that movie. I haven't seen...
That film rules.
I haven't seen that movie in years. I have a friend of mine that fucking adores that movie, and she's watched it like a million times. I think she has it on DVD.
Awesome soundtrack, too.
You know what? She might have given me a copy of it, now that I think about it.
What's that? Every so often she buys you an iTunes download with a movie on it?
Yes.
Awesome.
Legally obtained.
Cut that part out.
Media.
Nope.
You know what? Out of all like, of the Christmas sequels, I feel like we don't like Home Alone 2, but out of all the Christmas sequels, is it the best one?
I don't know.
Wait, no. Christmas Prince 2? Or...
Is it the best? Well, is it the best Home Alone sequel? I would argue yes.
I mean, hands down, I would say yes, and I haven't even seen those other three movies. But
the other ones I've seen make Home Alone 2 look like a masterpiece.
I just imagine, you know how like on like Reddit or whatnot, they'd be like, "What are the Fast and Furious ranked?" I just want to see like a thread of like people going hard about. No, no, no. It goes 5, 3, 2.
I genuinely think the only ranking that you could probably do is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for these movies, right? I can't see it being any other way that there was a sudden uptick.
Unless The Holiday Heist is somehow a hidden gem.
I've not heard anybody say anything to suggest that.
I mean, if it can one up 4, power to them, I guess, but I don't know. 4 was... I don't know why the fuck they named the kid Kevin McAllister. The setup, he has fewer siblings. The setup is completely different. His parents are divorced, and it's just a terrible fucking movie. And it just, how dare they? How dare they use those names?
Staying on a December-ish theme, Megan, what are we going to do next week for New Year's Eve?
We are going to do Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh man, talking about cash cows and movies where people turn up for a paycheck. Oof, I haven't seen Ghostbusters 2 in a long time, but
I don't think I've seen it as many times as the first one, but I've seen it a lot. When I was a kid, I had a quote unquote picture book of Ghostbusters 2. So it had photos from the film, and it actually included the deleted scenes.
I mean, yeah, that movie, it's the laziest of lazy sequels, in my opinion, but I guess we're going to get into that next week. Until then, we have been Bad With Numbers from Toronto, Canada, wishing you a happy holidays. Stay safe out there. Goodbye.
Ho, ho, ho.
Like I said, do you want us to carol?
Well, I think Bush is probably the worst president in the history of the United States.